Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, something occurred to me the other day that I thought was kind of interesting related to Georgia, even though the topic at hand really has nothing to do with UGA. Think about the common conversation that's taken place in college football over the course of the last few days. People have wondered, is the Alabama team that just won the national championship the greatest team of all time? Now, I realize that across the entire landscape of sports, college football, every other sport included, that people who do this for a living, kind of yell into microphones, things like that, we all have a pretty heavy dose of recency bias from time to time, that whatever we've just seen is either the greatest or the worst thing of all time. I realize there's probably too much of that. I've got like a bunch of TVs on in front of me over here, literally. You know, you got Max Kellerman on the one TV, Skip Bayless on the other. They're almost certainly, I can't hear what they're saying, but they're almost certainly saying something that just happens, either the greatest thing that's ever happened, the worst thing that's ever happened, or the weirdest thing that's ever happened. That's just kind of the way that, sports talk goes. So I realize that you know, there's probably a little bit of skepticism required to say anything that just happened is the greatest thing that's ever happened, but it has been going on. People have been wondering just how good this Alabama team is, and to maybe bolster the idea of recency bias being a little bit of a problem, one of the teams that gets compared to Alabama this year is the LSU team from a year ago. Is the Alabama team from 2020 the greatest team of all time, or was the team from the year before that the greatest team of all time after 150 years worth of college football? And the truth is, these kinds of debates, while fun to have, probably don't really have a very satisfying answer once you kind of, you know, arrive at the conclusion. Different people think different things. But the fact that we're even discussing the possibility that this year's Alabama team, who Georgia had to play on the road and lost to, last year's LSU team, which Georgia played in the SEC championship game and also lost to, that these two teams might be among the greatest teams in college football history. Certainly on the offensive side of the ball, you can say they were doing things offensively, the likes of which no one has ever done before. The fact that we're even having that discussion would lead you to believe and kind of lead you to the conclusion that, man, things are really tough on Georgia in terms of establishing what it wants to establish under Kirby Smart. And this is not me like making excuses for Georgia or kind of like crying over spilt milk of the challenge of the SEC. This is none of that kind of stuff, at least I don't think it is. This is really more about just the matter of fact difficulty of, hey, when you want to arrive and be treated as a part of the exclusive club in college football, when you're doing so in the SEC and your measuring stick is Nick Saban in Alabama or the one team that's occasionally good enough to beat Nick Saban in Alabama, you're just left with a really, really tough measuring stick. And let's face it, you know, for those of you who've ever try to accomplish anything in life, you know, lose weight or save money or anything else, the ability to measure progress is just really important. You know, people, scientists, I think, have shown this, that people can endure almost anything in terms of difficult challenges and difficult circumstances as long as they have some way of noticing some progress towards a goal. Even if it's small incremental progress, when you can see that progress, I think it kind of leads to a happier outcome. And the problem for Georgia from time to time is that when you compare yourself to Alabama, you compare yourself to LSU, you know, two teams that were in the discussion for greatest team of all time, and you come up short in those games, obviously you know you're not the greatest team of all time, but are you getting better year over year? Are you getting closer to being in a discussion like that? It becomes difficult to measure your progress. That's why I think, to kind of long preamble to set up the point that I want to make, that's why I think the schedule journey that Georgia is about to embark on is really interesting. And I don't just mean for the 2021 season, although we'll have more on that in a moment, why that is particularly interesting. But the fact that Georgia is about to open itself up and start playing a lot more big-time non-conference opponents, Clemson in 2021, you've got Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, all these teams coming up in the years after that, it gives Georgia a chance to measure its progress, I would say, against a team other than the very best team in college football in a given year, or depending on how you kind of view it, maybe one of the best teams of all time, which the reigning SEC champion the last couple of years has ended up being. It's almost like Georgia, by kind of getting out from the SEC footprint a little bit, has a chance to go show what it's really all about in some other measuring stick type games. And let's face it, when Georgia's had a chance to play these kind of games, it's actually done really well. I mean, we were told heading into New Year's Day in the Peach Bowl that the Cincinnati Bearcats were worthy of being in the college football playoff. Well, Georgia beat that team. We were also told, you know, back in 2017 that, you know, Oklahoma college football playoff team in the college football playoff, Georgia gets a win there. One of the few teams, by the way, in the last few years to collect a college football playoff win is the Georgia Bulldogs. Even win any game in the playoff whatsoever, Georgia, one of the few teams to be able to do that. It did so back in 2017. Home and home in 2017, 2019 with Notre Dame, Georgia was able to win both of those games. That Georgia has been able to measure itself against the best teams from other conferences or the best team from an independent ranks or whatever else, Georgia's actually performed pretty well. So the excitement that builds for Georgia, starting with the season opener in 2021, getting a chance to play a team like Clemson, to me is about more than just, hey, kind of a cool matchup, cool game, whatever else. I think for Georgia, it can also be a chance to show that it actually can play with the very best teams in the country, no matter, you know, what the brand is, no matter what conference they're coming from, no matter what else, that Georgia belongs on a stage like that. And I think it's about to get really exciting around Georgia football, starting with the season opener against Clemson in 2021. Now, with all of that in mind, let me go back to Kirby Smart from, what, a little bit more than a year ago, I guess, when he was talking about all these big games that Georgia had scheduled. At the time, if memory serves, the 2021 season opener with Clemson actually hadn't been scheduled yet. But so many of these big games for Georgia had been scheduled. The big non-conference games, the big home-and-home series, the neutral site stuff, everything else in between. And a lot of folks were noticing, hey, what's this about for Kirby? You know, why does Kirby want to do this? What is Kirby's philosophy related to all of this? And Kirby had a lot to say about that. There's a small snippet of Smart's remarks on this that I kind of want to bring back to the forefront here today, because I think it does set us up for the excitement that's going to build for Clemson in the season opener later on this fall. This is Kirby going back to two springs ago.
I'm thinking that to get in the playoffs, as the future goes, I don't know whether they'll ever expand it. That's not for me to even kind of divulge on, but I do think that you're going to need a quality of schedule to do that. I think that there's going to be two lost teams in the future if they've got a really tough schedule that'll be able to make that. I also think at the University of Georgia, you should be able to recruit the finest, best players in the country out of your own state and across the country, because our academic institution is so highly thought of. So I want to have the best players. I want to play the best teams. Kids come to college to play big games. They don't come to play, I would never name anybody, but they don't come to play anybody, the Sisters of the Poor. They want to play the best teams. So we want to go schedule the best teams.
Listen, I think you can split Smart, his remarks there, into two separate halves. The first half of what he says there about more two-loss teams making the college football playoff in the future, that's his opinion. I'm not quite so sure that I agree with that based on the way the committee behaves. So I think we'll wait and see how true that comes out to be, that the tougher schedule, more losses, but better chance for big wins increases your chance to make the college football playoff. Frankly, I think the jury is out on whether that's true or not. But the second half of what Smart says, I think, is undeniably true. And I love the way that he says it. Hey, at Georgia, we want to recruit the best players, and the best players want to go up against the best teams in the biggest possible games. That is one of the best commercials for college football you could ever hear. Let's get the best players we can. Let's put them on the field against each other. Let's create the biggest games imaginable, and let's let all of us who enjoy this sport, whether it be fan, media, coach, player, whatever else, let's just celebrate this sport on the biggest possible stage of all. That is so well said by Kirby Smart, and such an exciting thing to think about as Georgia gets ready to play Clemson to start the 2021 season. Now, with that in mind, there's a little bit of news related to that here today. Clemson got some good news when Justin Ross, and I'll show you his tweet here, a really cool video. If you get a chance to check out his video, you can watch this for yourself. Ross, who missed last season because of a spinal issue, and it's really scary for a player who I have great respect for, but Ross is announcing he's returning to Clemson here in 2021. Healthy, hopefully ready to go, and really ready to be a big contributor for the Tigers all season long. But obviously we all remember what he was like in the 2018 National Championship game when Clemson dominated Alabama. So his presence, a name that people know, a target for Clemson quarterback DJ Uiagalelei, becomes just a really interesting subplot to this game of on the start of the 2021 season, especially understanding for Georgia, you're replacing your secondary, you got a lot of new names, a lot of new faces in there, and the Ross news is just one of a lot of big time news stories that's going to come up in the weeks and the days ahead that I think make fans on both sides of this game, Georgia fans and Clemson fans, more and more excited about what it's going to be like when Georgia and Clemson do get together. And frankly, for fans who aren't even fans of Georgia or Clemson, they just like college football, the idea that the hype is going to continue to build for this, I think is going to be really fun. Because as Smart said, the best games involve the best talent. Georgia's got plenty of that. Household names that a lot of folks around the country are going to be very familiar with. Clemson's got some of that too. Ross coming back gives them another name there. A challenge for the Georgia secondary probably to be ready to go in week one against a program that certainly produced big-time wide receiver play in the past. I think that's probably, you know, pretty easy to assume that is indeed the case. It is a big challenge. But when you come to a school like Georgia, you expect big challenges. You'd be bored if you didn't have them. So Georgia-Clemson gets a little bit bigger because of the return of Justin Ross, but making the game a little bit bigger, I think, makes it just a little bit more fun for everybody involved. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Of course, we are available on podcast form wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We are just here for you wherever you are, and so glad to have all of you with us here today. And a big thanks to our friends at Kroger for making it all possible. Kroger doing great things for the community. They've been there for us throughout the entire year, you know, keeping us well-stocked with our shelves when it comes to food, putting food on our table here as well. And Kroger's also kind of keeping you in mind right now when it comes to eating healthy, something that everybody has on mind, at least a lot of folks have top of mind here to start the brand new year. Where at Kroger, you can eat better for less. They've got savings on healthy and organic foods such as Simple Truth items. So make sure you check that out at your local Kroger. You can eat healthy for less with our friends at Kroger. And of course, it's great to have them here today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. All right, we've got a lot to do on our program today. We'll get a chance to talk to Jeff Sintel a little bit later on. A lot of UGA recruiting stuff that I want to get to with Jeff here. We'll do that here coming up in just a couple of minutes time. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And I'm going to address this topic with Jeff here in just a moment. But before we do that, as a way of setting all this up, let me go back in time to a year ago when Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning was announced as a Broyles Award finalist. And Lanning got to go back when we were getting together in person and having award ceremonies and things like that. Lanning got to go and be honored as a finalist for the award, young defensive coordinator, having early success at UGA. And in the midst of kind of being a part of that, Lanning told a story, which I thought was great, that really kind of just demonstrated how quickly Lanning's coaching star seemed to go on the rise and just how much his profile as a coach had grown in a very quick and fast fashion. It's actually kind of an amazing coaching story and probably speaks well to just the professionalism that he's shown throughout the coaching ranks to get where he is. This is a really fun story from Dan Lanning as he was honored as one of the finalists of the Broyles Award a year ago. And after I play this for you, we're going to talk about Lanning a little bit here today. This is Dan Lanning.
You know, for me as a young coach, you know, there's moments like this past season. You know, one of the moments that stick out to me is playing in the Notre Dame game. It's coming down to the final drive. You know, we're a team that likes to match personnel. We want to run the right personnel out on the field to match what a team's going to do offensively. And we're in the huddle, and it's the last defensive play of that game. We run out the personnel on the field. We give them the call, let them know what we're going to run. And I realize about halfway through that we've got one of the wrong guys running on the field. And there's 93,000 people. The atmosphere is electric. And I run out in the middle of the field to grab the guy and pull him back, and it's a timeout. But as I'm running back to the sideline to get the right guy in, I can see Coach Smart saying, "You can't do that. What are you doing?" And I'm sitting there realizing to myself, dang, I was an elementary PE school teacher not that long ago. How did I sneak my way into the middle of this field, Vince Dooley Field, Sanford Stadium, on one of the biggest stages in college football? Unbelievably blessed and fortunate.
I think it's a great story, and I think for anybody, and we have a lot of folks who listen to the show who are coaches themselves, and they are also right now working their way up the coaching ranks, the high school and everything else. And of course, we're always grateful here for the contribution those coaches make to the football players who are really the future of our society in lots of different walks of life. And so to see someone like Lanning, who kind of goes from, as he said, elementary school PE teacher to defensive coordinator at Georgia, getting yelled at by Kirby Smart, it's a pretty amazing coaching trajectory. And frankly, it's not just Georgia fans who have apparently noticed that. There was a very interesting, I guess we'll call this a rumor for now, Chip Brown, who covers Texas for 24/7 Sports, and talking about the possibility of who might join Texas coach Steve Sarkisian. And by the way, more on him later on the show, the raid that he seems to have pulled off of the Alabama coaching staff. But Brown, the very good veteran Texas reporter, mentioning that, hey, maybe Steve Sarkisian could also pull Pete Golding away from Alabama. And Chip Brown suggests if that happens, there's a possibility that Dan Lanning could leave Georgia and go to Alabama. This is a subscription story. I'm going to invite you to read the entire thing for yourself there at 247sports.com. Good job of reporting there by Chip Brown on that. But it certainly seems like, well, maybe the coaching rumor mill is not completely done for Georgia as of yet, with a lot of programs still trying to fill in the pieces and all of this. Frankly, I have a hard time believing that Lanning would leave Georgia for Alabama. That seems like a weird lateral move, even though Alabama's the reigning national champion. In terms of the prestige of the job, it still, I would say, is a lateral move, certainly for Lanning's goal of being a head coach. I don't think it's easier to become a head coach as defensive coordinator at Alabama than it is at Georgia, because Mel Tucker showed you could leave Georgia just fine, go be a head coach at Colorado. Now he's making big bucks as the head coach at Michigan State. So that's a very similar career path to what Lanning could travel here. So I don't necessarily take it all that seriously that he would leave Georgia for a place like Alabama if that job were to open up. But I did want to let you know that rumor and that report was out there. So I guess do with that what you will. And by the way, Chip Brown also mentions a very interesting possibility for who might replace Lanning if that's the case. But I won't give that away to you for free. You can check that at 247sports.com if you want to. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. Marco's is America's most beloved pizza, real authentic pizza made the Italian way. We love our friends at Marco's because, let's face it, it's great pizza at a great price, and that really matters. I got my kids eat like an army. It's amazing how much food they're able to consume. They can eat a whole pizza themselves, I would think. They certainly come close to that. So the idea of being able to feed them and keep them happy and full for a very nice price, that's something my family takes very seriously and very grateful for when it comes to Marco's Pizza. And in fact, right now you can get a large specialty pizza. I've been telling you about these specialty pizzas, like the white cheesy or the deluxe, the garden, the all meat. Lots of great specialty pizzas there at Marco's. You can check those out. Great specialty pizzas there. You can get a large specialty pizza right now for just $13.99. So you can find that online, the Marco's app or Marco's.com, and it's Marco's Pizza delivering Around the Doghouse to us here today. All right, speaking of coaching rumors involving Texas and Alabama, we're going to do a little bit more on those coming up a little bit later on in the program. But for now, on everything related to UGA recruiting, let's get ready to talk to our buddy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So we'll talk to Jeff Sintel here on the road, assisted by AAA. Of course, grateful to have AAA both keeping my family health safe when we're on the roads, but also helping deliver great information here as Jeff Sintel travels the roads all across Georgia and the Southeast, covering the latest on UGA recruiting here. Jeff, before we get into the recruiting news of the day and the week, let me let you piggyback off what I was just saying there. Dan Lanning, name kind of showing up in the rumor mill here a little bit as the coaching carousel continues to spin. Possibility, as Chip Brown has reported for 24/7 Sports, maybe landing in Alabama if dominoes were to fall the right way. Do you take that seriously?
Hey, Brandon. Yeah, good morning, sir. I tell you what, the stuff there with Lanning, I mean, I guess with Lanning in Georgia, I've considered every year that he's had with Georgia as his defensive coordinator, every year since the first one, kind of a bonus season. He's that well-respected. He's a great recruiter. A lot of the guys in the beat reporter tribe who cover Georgia look at him as a future head coach, perhaps. I will say that Chip Brown report does not surprise me. I think it kind of adheres to a couple of things that I've been hearing over the last 30 days or so. And the dominoes thing that he's discussing there in that report is very interesting, because it would be Pete Golding from Alabama going to Texas with the blessing from Saban, even though that maybe some of these other hires that he's pulled off of his staff, that would be Sarkisian, didn't maybe have his blessing. The defensive coordinator job, Pete Golding would be allowed to leave, provided he could get Lanning away from Georgia. And then Lanning away from Georgia would kind of be backed up by, you know, we some of the things that I'd heard over the last month, that Will Muschamp was in the building at Georgia. He'd been working on some sort of analyst consulting type role. Not sure what that was going to be. So it feels like all of these dominoes and linking under the – now, this is not quite journalism yet, but it's kind of what we're hearing and what you've heard. And Brandon, I don't think those are the only dominoes, because I think what might happen when Urban Meyer starts selecting his staff for the Jaguars now, he's gonna pillage the Ohio State staff. He's probably going to pillage a couple of members off the Texas staff, or at least Tom Herman's old Texas staff. So I think some more of this coordinator shuffling and pieces shuffling, I don't think we've probably seen the last of it.
So it's interesting you say something there that does catch my attention. You're saying that you have heard from people who've said they have seen Muschamp around Athens lately. Can you tell us just a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's just simply what I've heard. I've heard that Muschamp was in the building last month, kind of looking over things, kind of trying to get him some sort of, you know, just looking at Georgia leading up to bowl prep. It's kind of that, I guess it's that thing Kirby Smart always mentions when he talks about, you know, just self-scouting, trying to see what we can do better. Obviously, the connection there everybody draws is his son, Jackson Muschamp, is a walk-on quarterback on the team. And then you also have the long-time connections going back years and years and years to their time at Georgia. And then Kirby getting some of his first breaks in the coaching profession thanks to Muschamp's recommendation as well. So those guys go back a long way. The reports that are coming out around Texas, they don't really surprise me.
So let me transition to, I guess, the topic at hand, on the road, assisted by AAA with Jeff Sintel here. Really good piece that you had the other day with four-star defensive back Terrion Arnold. The Arnold thing for me is so interesting because, obviously, you know, I've come to respect him greatly as a player. We know his final three. It's Alabama. It's Florida. I think I've kind of operated on the assumption for a while that Florida would be a major player in this because of maybe the hometown pull or whatever else. But then Florida makes the defensive back coaching moves to jettison Torian Gray and Ron English there, and that kind of left me wondering, well, how does it impact things for Arnold? Arnold was very open with you about a couple of things in the story about, you know, his friendship with Xavier Sory and how excited he'd be to potentially room with him. You know, the idea that his family doesn't mind traveling to come to games in Athens, that the distance would not maybe be a factor there. And, you know, I guess here's the way I want to ask this. When you read the story at DogNation.com with you and Terrion Arnold, as a Georgia fan, you are left to feel really pretty good about that. Is it really going to be that simple and easy to kind of put a bow in the 2021 class, the way it was almost foreshadowed by some of the things that Arnold said in the piece recently at DogNation.com?
Well, I guess I've been talking to T. That's what those around him call him a lot. They just call him T. But I've been talking to him, I guess, since maybe after the Missouri game in 2019. And, man, I'm just going to be honest. He's always sounded like a guy that already maybe doesn't know he's really favoring Georgia or thinking he's liking Georgia. But he always comes across to me with some of the same – it sounds like similar things I've heard from similar players over the years. Now, do I think Georgia has been the leader for him? He never mentions that. He never confirms that. But I think Georgia's always been in a very good spot. Maybe not one, but maybe always two with him. And the other thing he said, his first visit was a 10 out of 10. He really felt like he was the only recruit for that Missouri game. Georgia gave him very special treatment, like he was already an All-American. He was the only guy that I think got to take pictures that day in the locker room. That was going back to Missouri. And then he comes back subsequent times. He comes back for the truck bed visit. The things with Terrion is, I mean, he was already a good candidate for Georgia because of the needs at DB, because of his versatility. I think he could eventually be a star in the SEC as a nickel corner, as a press man corner, or also as a free safety. That's the versatility Georgia needed, and Georgia needed it, desperately needed it, before the decisions were made by, like, Tyson Campbell, Tyreek Stevenson, and Dejon Nugget Warren. So the chances with Terrion have only kind of grown, in my view, especially when you look at what's happened to Florida with those the dismantling of those relationships from his primary recruiters. Now, having said that, there is always the specter looming of the Alabama Crimson Tide. I tried when I wrote that story to balance out that, you know, I've always felt Alabama was a really strong player too. They made the decision that they needed him in their class as well. Terrion has said they're saving a scholarship for him. And
well, that's what I was going to ask. I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's what I was going to ask. But by my count, Alabama signed about 50 players. Do they really have room for Terrion Arnold too?
Yeah, because I mean, it would be Terrion Arnold. This would be another caveat, and Nick Saban might just need to take the victory lap for his entire 2020 employment review or performance evaluation for the 2020 cycle. But somehow he has the number one class, maybe the best class Alabama's ever had, yeah. Especially off the offensive line. No one knows if it will ever rival the 2017 class, which I think in my book has replaced the 2010 Florida class as the greatest recruiting class of the modern era. I think you're going to end up with like 6 wide receivers selected in the first round, something like that. But somehow they're going to have room for, I think the number is 25 already, and then they're going to have room to add Kamar Wheaton, a 5-star running back. And then there's also the 5-star defensive lineman out of the state of Washington that they're also really tied in with there, along with maybe Washington, Oregon, and Ohio State. And then also, would they find room for Terrion Arnold when they've already signed 5 cornerbacks and they've already signed 5 defensive backs and then 3 cornerbacks? But it seems Nick, if he can find a way, he certainly will.
I feel like Bernie Madoff's accountant may be doing the scholarship stuff for Alabama, if you don't mind me suggesting.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. The guy that tallied up all the passing yards for and the receiving yards for Devonta Smith in the first half against Ohio State.
Or maybe it's the person who counted up the 18 national championships for Alabama. Maybe that's the person that's also in charge of counting up the available scholarships for right now. I feel like Alabama's done some pencil whipping of people in the past, and this may be the latest example of that.
Well, we know about blue shirts. We know about gray shirts. We know about white shirts. Maybe we need to get some Tide shirts or some Crimson shirts where they're going to figure out somebody where you can delay enrollment until your kids are about to go to school before you can come on scholarship at Alabama.
I would say some of the Bama fans who harass me on Twitter may be more of the no shirt category.
Ooh, Brent, come on. Clean and decent programming here in 2021, man. Right. So
were you about to tell me to rise above hate?
No. No, I was about to say rise above the keyboard gangsters. That's what I was trying to say.
Sure.
Rise above the keyboard gangsters.
I like to think I do.
So how do you say no to Alabama, man? Let's be honest. If Alabama's got room, they've got this new sports science strength and conditioning program that a lot of folks around the country have been talking about for the last year. That was what Alabama put in place in a different direction after Scott Cochran left. I've heard high school coaches telling me they can't wait to get up there and figure out what Alabama's doing with how they're keeping all their players so healthy, how they got Jalen Waddle back so fast. And then they've got development. They've got true development. And you're going to win there if you're at Alabama under Nick Saban, point blank, period. So the thing there that I wanted to in that report was I wanted to get Terrion to contrast, okay, what's it like being recruited by Alabama compared to being recruited by Georgia? And he mentioned the differences in the men at the top of the organizations. He mentioned, you know, Kirby's more fun. He's more plugged in. Nick Saban is more blunt. Every time I talk to him, he says that these three things really matter. Relationships, competition, and then kind of respect. He knows Kirby. He's got this bond that he's connected to with the Georgia head coach. Because Kirby grew up in Bainbridge, that's only 30 minutes away from Tallahassee. Arnold feels some sort of kinship there with Kirby because they came from the same areas. He's liked everything he's heard from Georgia. I still think it's going to be very tough for Georgia versus Alabama there. But as close as I can move Terrion Arnold into a man, that's going to show you something about the state of Georgia football and state of Georgia recruiting. If they don't land that guy, especially now with all the departures in the defensive backfield and how you can kind of look at Georgia's DB depth chart and kind of see very expansive territory. I mean, I kidded with some of our fine readers on the Dog Nation forum that Georgia has more room in its defensive backfield right now than John Dutton has for cattle on Yellowstone. I mean, that's kind of what's going on with how wide open he is. And Kerryon told me it was instant playing time after Dejon Nugget Warren left. And now you add Tyreek Stevenson into the mix and the expected departures of DJ Daniel, Eric Stokes, and Tyson Campbell. And he's got to be licking his chops for the chance to play at Georgia. The other thing folks got to know about Kerryon is that he wants to go somewhere where he'll be challenged every day, where there will be receivers that can bust him up a little bit and get in his kitchen and force him to get a little bit better and to work even harder on his craft. I mean, Kerryon's a guy that will work out two or three times a day. He'll play basketball. He'll have speed training. He'll have weight training. He'll have a normal course of his day. He's a very dedicated guy to the craft of what it takes to get better. And I asked him, I said, does Georgia have the dudes that would enable you to get better? And he says, oh, yeah, Georgia's got those guys. I remember him telling me it would be a movie if he got the chance to go up against Georgia and its receivers, guys like George Pickens, Dominic Blaylock, Jermaine Burton, Marcus Roseme, Arian Smith. If he got to go up against guys like that in practice every day. So certainly, Kerryon Arnold, he's been the number one guy on the top targets list here for Dog Nation on Before the Hedges every Wednesday night since Amarius Mims signed. That was before everything else that's happened with defections and, you know, depletion. I think six out of the top seven guys from the defensive backfield from the 2020 season for Georgia are now gone. It's even gotten more extreme how much Georgia needs Kerryon Arnold, and I think he does see that.
All right, I want to ask you one more thing about Arnold related to all of this. Before that, though, let me remind folks, it's On the Road, assisted by AAA with Jeff Sintel here today. And, of course, as I've told you before, when I think about AAA, at least for a long time when I thought about them, the first thing that came to mind for me was their legendary roadside assistance for many of you. That's probably what you know about AAA as well. And, frankly, my family, my wife and I, have been very thankful to have AAA over the years. But here's something new that you need to think about AAA about when it comes to a very important aspect of taking the best possible care of your family. I'm talking about life insurance here. If you don't have it, you need it. And if you're in the market for it, AAA is a great option here. In fact, you need to learn about all the resources AAA has available to you when it comes to a life insurance. They want to simplify life insurance for you. So let me give you three ways to get in touch. How about by phone? 866-695-0222. That number, once again, 866-695-0222. You can also find them online at AAA.com/life. The website, once again, AAA.com/life. Or you can just stop by and say hello to the folks there inside one of the AAA offices, and they can tell you everything you need to know about that. All right, there's a couple other subjects I want to hit, Jeff. But let me just, as promised, do one more quick thing on Arnold before we move off of it. As you said before, there are open playing time slots for George in the secondary at the moment. But if Arnold were to choose UGA, do you think that Arnold is a viable candidate to play in his first year on campus and maybe alleviate some of UGA's depth concerns?
How about without question? I think he would be as advanced and as ready to play as any defensive back Georgia signed, quite frankly, in the last three or four years. I think Kerryon Arnold would be an instant. Even if he comes in June, which he would have to do if he chose Georgia or Alabama or even Florida. I think he is as talented and as versatile as any defensive back Georgia has signed so far in the Kirby Smart era. Can play safety, can play nickel, can play the cornerback spot. Even David Daniel, those guys got to play together briefly, Brandon. About this time a year ago, they worked on Cam Newton's team for maybe a few matter of weeks, and those guys were kind of the safety and the ball hawk that were in the back end of the 7-on-17 defense for Cam Newton, 7-on-17. We've heard about so many great players that have came through that program. Richard LeCount came through that program. I'll give you a tease on, this is how I felt, but when you hear it from Terrence Edwards, he's seeing the same things I'm seeing. Terrence Edwards and I were having a discussion this week about Kerryon Arnold. And among a bunch of players we were talking about, and he looked at Kerryon as a slightly bigger, more athletic Richard LeCount. And that's really all you need to say there.
High praise for sure there on that. Jeff, let me see if you can help do something for me here, because I get this question a lot from Georgia fans, and frankly, I'm not really quite sure how to answer. There's obviously justifiably a lot of attention being paid right now to Brock Vandegrift, the 2021 five-star quarterback signee. Brock began his Georgia career as a student here this week, and certainly looking forward to what we hope is a fairly normal spring practice. There's some really good stuff just in the last few days from you about Brock at DogNation.com. But it also leads a lot of Georgia fans to wonder, okay, so where does that leave things with Carson Beck right now? And as I've told some of our audience, we've had, you know, comment section, things like that, the honest truth is I'm not really quite sure, you know, what's going on with Beck right now. I really did not hear much about how his acclimation to college life went, his comfort with his first year on campus there at Georgia. Can you tell us anything about, you know, Beck's first year here at UGA? And if I were to ask you to make the comparison between the higher-rated recruit, Vandegrift, but the more experienced Beck because he's now been at Georgia for a year, how would you compare Beck and Vandegrift, and what can you tell us about Beck right now?
Yeah, so it's funny. You'd almost need a PowerPoint to put all these guys together. I think Beck's a little taller. He's about 6'4", about 210, 215. You like the fact that he's went through a full college season since last January. He's ran scouts. He's gone against Georgia's twos, even during those crucial melting pot type scrimmage events in fall prior to a season. He's had all the weight training. He's been in the quarterback rooms. And the arm there is just clearly there. He's got a plus arm. He can make all the throws. I think Beck kind of fits, also fits the, what I think you're looking for is you need a quarterback, not to be Lamar, not to go 60, but you need a quarterback on 3rd and 7 to get you 8 yards and just eke it out by the chains to keep him moving. Beck can do that. Beck has even done that where this is where he feels a big check right here. He can do that because he's also done that at a championship level against Florida 7A football, the highest classification in Florida. I think it's actually 8A in Florida now, but he's done that. He's done that against the very best players in Florida, checked the box with the biggest possible check in terms of facing really good live fire in high school football. And then you go to Brock and you look at Brock, who's the son of a coach, who will also early enroll, who's also maybe a guy that won't get you 60 like Lamar, but maybe Brock would get you probably about 10 or 11 on that 3rd and 7 instead of just eking out 8. He understands the game very well. He's been well-trained. Brock Vandegrift is the guy that trained Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence coming up through their high school years is the same guy that Brock Vandegrift has worked with since the 8th grade. Both men, I would say, are steely competitors. And I think that's just what Georgia needs. I think eventually, Brandon, I think this is what folks are wondering. They're wanting to hear about the tension. They're wanting to hear about the conflict. I think eventually there'll be a situation where Georgia and both of those young men have to figure out who's the quarterback of the future. I don't see it happening in spring drills. I don't see it happening that early. But eventually there's going to come a time when JT Daniels is getting paid to throw footballs. And then Georgia will have two really good playing assets there in terms of Brock Vandegrift and Carson Beck, who've been on campus for a good amount of time. And I think that will just be let the best quarterback win. And then usually the portal will sort out, you know, what happens, the aftermath of that. The thing with Beck, I think he played in one game this year. There were some that thought he was maybe the second man to go in after Dwan Mathis. In the Arkansas game, he traveled on a lot of football games as well. I just think, from what I've heard, I think that the Georgia program still believes in Carson Beck. I think they feel he has a very bright future in college football. And myself, like a lot of folks out there, want to see what he has that can help Georgia as well before people start wondering about, you know, how good is he going to be in red and black.
Well, let me just ask you this real quick, and I don't want to get too lost in this, but. You know, the one that comparison I made over and over again is whether it be a quarterback like Beck or somebody else, that when you see Mac Jones rewarded for his patience, when you see Kyle Trask at Florida rewarded for his patience, these are guys that stuck it out at programs and eventually went on to have very big seasons. Compare that to a lot of these quarterbacks, Jeff, and I hate to start mentioning names, but guys like I don't know, you know, Blake Barnett, former five-star that left Alabama, you know, some of these guys that kind of leave, they transfer, you know, they go somewhere, and they're kind of really never heard from again. That the idea that the transfer portal is the best pathway to success, if you're not enjoying immediate success, there are plenty of big-time quarterbacks that I don't know would necessarily stand as evidence of that. Do you think the patience of a guy like Mac Jones will have an impact on quarterbacks like Carson Beck in the future?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if you're immediately trying to draw that parallel, but, you know, Mac Jones trains in the offseason with the same Jacksonville quarterback guru developer, Denny Thompson, as Carson Beck. So those guys were throwing together at times during the offseason. I think the thing that everybody's got to wonder about with quarterbacks is I think opportunity would kind of beckon there a lot as well. Like, if you're going to leave Georgia, are you going to leave it for a, you know, a job that appears to be yours for the taking at another plum spot in college football? I think that's the thing to look about. Are you going to have the pieces around you? Or are you going to have the linemen around you? Folks, I hope people recognize that Carson Beck get a, you know, we have some recency bias here. I wrote a lot of these things about Carson Beck a year ago, which are the stories I'm writing now about Brock Vandegrift. Brock Vandegrift was integral, the most important recruit in kind of pulling the 2021 class together. Well, I think Carson Beck deserves those same laurels for how he kept the 2020 recruiting class together. He was the guy that was always talking to guys like Darnell Washington and Rosanee, the offensive lineman, Tate Ratledge, guys like that. He was a guy that was instrumental in kind of piecing together what Georgia built in the 2020 cycle as well. And I think Carson, you know, he's such a talented athlete. He's big. He was a former baseball commitment to Florida as a catcher. Great AAU type level hoops player. He could put 20 on a really good team from a backcourt. Very motivated. Very strong, determined family. And these are just the hard choices, Brandon. But they're the choices you want to have to make eventually on the practice field, rather than you would have a guy opting out, a guy's knee not ready, a longtime former walk-on, proven backup, and then nobody with any playing time. Georgia just wants to do whatever it can to avoid the situation it had at quarterback for the first half of the 2020 season. I think the devil's in the details, but when the details are somehow, some way, no matter what happened, you didn't have two or three guys that could go win a big SEC game on the roster at the same time. I don't think Georgia needs to get in that business again, and that's why I think they, you know, continue the narration out to the 2020 cycle and the 2023 cycle. I think Georgia needs to get a guy that could start multiple years for the program in every class if they're really chasing championships, because that's what Alabama and that's what Ohio State and that's what Clemson have as well.
All right, I'm not going to be able to get in everything I wanted to ask today because we've gone really, really long, but I do want to highlight one more thing before we're done. That's the five-star running back, Emmanuel Henderson. This shapes up, I would say, as a recruiting battle that you and I will probably talk a lot about in the months to come, and the perfect preview of that was the story that you wrote at DogNation.com this week. So, Jeff, for those who are just kind of taking the on-ramp here for the upcoming recruiting cycle, can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on with Emmanuel Henderson?
Yeah, so Emmanuel, I think he's number three on our 2022 top targets. We dropped that build a couple of weeks ago on Before the Hedges. And, Brandon, I know this. I thought about this for a second because I know how you have an affinity for reading and talking and pontificating about five-star running backs. And I thought for a second, this might have been the longest drought where I wrote extensively about a five-star back in the next cycle, in the coming cycle with Georgia. I mean, I think the last time I did that in 2020 was when we were writing about Will Shipley early and then Trevion Henderson maybe around March, April or so before he made his decision. So really, Brendan, it's been like 8 months since we've written about a five-star back with his eyes on Georgia. Emmanuel Henderson is the number one running back in the country. He's out of Alabama, and I know everybody's going, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. Hit the reverse button, you know, hit the B, 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 B. But he is a Georgia native. And two things, you guys read this story, you want to know why to read this story. If five-star back, number one running back in the country is not enough yet. Sometimes, Brandon, when I do this work that I'm so glad and thankful and proud to do every day and every year for Dog Nation, but meeting that local football coach and hearing him talk about the player, sometimes it's just so good for the soul. So, like, I was in Hartford, Alabama. I learned that Emmanuel Henderson is the best player to come out of that area since, like, 1931, Brandon. And I almost had to, like, get a Q-tip or something like that and swab out my ears. And I'm like, what? I mean, I know we're social distancing. I know I'm 6 feet away from you, dude, but can you repeat that? And he's like, yeah, there's this guy named Dixie Howell, who was the 1934 Rose Bowl MVP for Alabama, who came out of it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Wow. So that's what you want in the local high school coach.
By the way, Dixie Howell is a great name for a player back in the 30s. That sounds like the name of a player that would exist in the 30s.
That's kind of the Gunnar Stockton of 1932, right?
I think you may be right about that.
So then I asked him, I was like, all right, man. Because I said this, man. I was like, tell me how good he is. And I said, because for me, if you've got a play call and it's designed to get you 7 yards, and your back gets you 7, and then he wiggles and gets you 8 or 9 with lean forward. Well, I'm not really enthused by seeing a back that can get you 9 when the play was going to get him 7 if it was blocked right against a certain look. And I said, I want to know about that guy that can take that play that was supposed to go 7. He can make that next one or two guys miss in the phone booth and turn that 7 into 70 or that 7 into 45. How is he at that? Well, first of all, he player paralleled, which I thought was a very good comparison to head coach. Jim Bob Stripling, by the way, that's the name. Jim Bob Stripling, the name of his head coach.
Great.
Former quarterback in the SEC.
Wow.
But he said, first of all, compared him to a faster Kerryon Johnson. And in my book, that's a high praise. I mean, everybody wonders about Kerryon Johnson not being a first-round pick. But Kerryon Johnson, fully healthy for that 2017 SEC championship game rematch with Auburn, that thing's a totally different deal, and that thing might go a lot longer than it did with Georgia on the road to the Rose Bowl. But let me set this up. He says, listen, before Emmanuel got here, I had a play sheet the size of a Waffle House menu. And now that he's here, my play sheet is the size of an index card.
It's a great line.
Brandon, I'm breaking one of your 5 Dog Nation Daily Commandments. Don't drop plugs on the show. But I had to. I had to invoke that favorite breakfast waffle sort branded eatery type with the yellow in its logo. I had to say that because I literally told the coach, as like, coach, that's going to be way up in the story. I need to laugh about this for a couple of seconds. But that's true. When you've got a great player like that, you just got to simplify it. You just got to create room and let them do the rest, no matter how much a team will over-pursue and align to one side. You just stick your foot in the ground and go the other way, and backside will be open. This is a kid, another thing you want to hear when you read about 5-star running back is Brandon, he was hurt for 6 or 7 weeks this past season, and he only had 1,800 yards and about 18 touchdowns. He was very limited with 1,800 yards and 18 touchdowns. When he was fully healthy as a sophomore in 2019, he had over 2,000 yards and 46 touchdowns. So when people call 1,800 and 18 a bad year or a down year, you know you got a special football player there.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Dell McGee will keep his recruitment smothered and covered, and maybe we'll hear some good news on that at some point in time. Jeff, thank you for being here on the road, assisted by AAA here today. I certainly appreciate your time. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll look forward to getting a chance to speak to you soon as well.
Hey, guys. Hope everybody has a great weekend, and watch that DogNation.com page for some information this weekend.
Look forward to that, Jeff. Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Oh, boy, that was a long one. And I didn't even get a chance. He wrote a good piece about Jalen Walker. Didn't get a chance to ask him about that. I was curious about Treyon Webb's decommitment from the class of 2023. Didn't get a chance to ask him about that. That's half an hour. That was a solid half hour. So very, very, very appreciate Jeff and his generous time. Really good recruiting stuff there on all of that front. By the way, let me also give you a quick shout out here to my friends at Classic City Lager as well. You know, we've been telling you about Classic City Lager really all year long. And I'll tell you a funny story real quick. So this is about like back before the season began, like, you know, kind of spring, late spring, summer, moving in towards the start of the fall, we had a chance to go visit the beautiful snow tire facility right there in downtown Athens. And when you go visit them, it's like going to visit your grandma. You know, they kind of leave you with a bunch of stuff to take home with you. And so they gave us a bunch of Classic City Lager. Our friends at Creature Comforts Brewing Company did. Took it home. My wife has fallen in love with it. The other day, she was like, hey, you got any more of that Classic City Lager left? And I said, no, I think we've kind of run out of our stash. And so she went to the store, went and picked some up, 12-pack can, brought it home. And I've been telling folks they can do that themselves as well, because the taste of Athens that you want from our friends at Creature Comforts Brewing Company, a true Athens original from Classic City Lager, you can pick that up wherever you like to do some shopping, whatever your retailer of choice is. Classic City Lager is available. I love the way the cans look. Beautiful cans. Can. Great beer to go with some football this weekend. It's a lager style beer. It means it's a lighter beer, but no sacrifice on flavor. It's just good cold beer. Make sure you check out some Classic City Lager here today. All right, SEC through time. A couple stories I want to hit to here. So we talked earlier in the show about the rumor of Steve Sarkisian maybe trying to wrestle away Pete Golding away from Alabama. And by the way, quick aside here, isn't it interesting that a year ago, Bama fans were trying to push Pete Golding out the door, and now after a national championship, which Bama's defense didn't always play great, all of a sudden now Bama fans are left to wonder, are they going to be able to hold on to Pete Golding, have him pulled away by Steve Sarkisian in Texas? The reason why this is also interesting is because of the raid on assistants that has been ongoing by Sarkisian as of late. The couple names that probably matter more than anything else, Jeff Banks leaving as special teams coordinator at Alabama to go to Texas. I believe his new salary at Texas is going to be $1 million a year, I think, so we're not paying special teams coordinators $1 million a year. Banks is a major, major recruiting force, especially there in the state of Texas. One of the rumors that I'd heard, and you read all this stuff on these online things, you don't really know what's true or not, but apparently Saban was not happy that Banks was going back to Texas, even though Banks' school-age children still live in College Station. He wanted to at least live in the same state as his children, according to what I read online, but apparently that wasn't a good enough reason for Nick Saban. So that's kind of out there. Big-time acquisition by Steve Sarkisian on that front. Then also Kyle Flood as well, who'd been offensive line coach at Alabama, not getting a chance to kind of do that at Texas, but also get that offensive coordinator title there too. There have been others. Steve Sarkisian really going after that Alabama staff. And here's one thing I'll say about this. And goodness knows I have given Saban plenty of compliments this week after his team won the national championship. But the one vulnerability I do believe that he has, and it has been difficult to exploit, to be frank, but it is still a vulnerability nonetheless, is that I don't think that Saban is particularly fun to work for. And even for upwardly mobile coaches who kind of, burn the candle at both ends and kind of have that, ceaseless, boundless energy, there is still a what would appear to me from the outside looking in, a joylessness about working for Nick Saban that's not always attractive. And by comparison, at least, like I said, on the outside looking in, and this is totally just a kind of a 10,000-foot view, but working for Kirby Smart just seems to be more fun. That's the appearance that it gives off. I'm sure that Steve Sarkisian has sold, guys like Banks and Flood on, if you leave, come to Texas, you can make a lot of money here too, we can win here too, but we'll have more fun doing so. And that's one of the reasons why I think that Saban has a little more churn with his coaching staff overall than even the average successful coach has probably had, because Saban asks a lot from his guys. He has put a lot of guys in better professional positions than they otherwise would have been, but it's not particularly fun to work for him. At least that's the appearance that it gives off. And so if you're looking for a way in which you can see Alabama's spot at the top eventually erode a bit, that's probably the best chance that you've got, although to Saban's credit, for the most part, when he's been forced to refill these coaching coffers every year, he has, for the most part, kind of gotten that right. I think this is kind of interesting that Urban Meyer, now head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, there are rumors out there that he might be looking to Scott Linehan as his offensive coordinator. What's interesting about this is that Linehan didn't have a very good year with LSU this past year's passing game coordinator as the guy who came in as the replacement for Joe Brady. And so for all the hype of, oh my gosh, we're going to hire Urban Meyer, we're going to draft Trevor Lawrence, and we're going to saddle him with a failed offensive mind, it seems like a weird speed bump on the way to what is otherwise a very good feel-good story for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also kind of reminds me of this. Of course, Meyer is a former Florida coach. I said the other day, I don't take the Dan Mullen, the NFL rumor, serious at all, but somehow, some way, if the Falcons had hired Dan Mullen, I would not have cheered for that team. For the duration of time that Mullen was the coach of the Falcons, I would not cheer for the Falcons. That's my favorite NFL team as an Atlantan. That's where I live, in the Atlanta area. But I would not root for the Falcons if Dan Mullen was the coach. Has enough time passed between Urban Meyer's time at Florida and now that I could have more easily rooted for him. Connor Riley, who's producing today, shaking his head no. That's probably true as well, but I know for a fact that I would not be rooting for Dan Mullen if he was coach at Florida. And let me also just squeeze this in very, very quick because we are now working on a good solid hour of being on the air. I think it's really interesting what's going to happen this offseason at College Station. Y'all know that I'm a little bit of a believer in Jimbo Fisher. I touted him before the start of last season. I feel validated on that prediction. I think that A&M was certainly playoff, you know, worthy of the discussion, even if they weren't one of the four teams that made it. What's about to happen this offseason, and Jimbo Fisher's addressed this in recent days, between, like, you know, guys like Zach Calzada, who'd been in the program, Haynes King, who was last year's backup. They signed a guy for the 2021 class. You know, Jimbo Fisher has been known during his career for quarterbacks. They have not had great quarterback play yet at Texas A&M, but the offensive line got way better. They ran the ball way better. Let's watch this quarterback competition that's going to unfold this spring at Texas A&M. And if you really want to see a new program emerging in the SEC West, if Jimbo Fisher can provide the quarterback play for which, as a coach, he's famous for, to go along with the more substantial physicality that he's kind of brought with him to College Station, let's watch what happens at Texas A&M this offseason. That could be one of the real interesting SEC offseason stories. We'll make that your SEC through, and let me also remind you before I award today's golden shoe that I love to feature you as a part of our Gator Hater roll call. Now, I've got a lot of folks who sent stuff in. I'm a little bit behind on honoring everyone who is worthy of that honor, so I'll be looking forward to doing that a lot with you next week. But there is still time for you to get your own Gator Hater credentials bragged about here, part of our show. Please hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Show me some Gator Hater swag or some reasons why you're a Gator Hater, and we'll just kind of have some fun with that. With that in mind, let me give out today's Golden Shoe winner. Let's show you this on the screen here. A really good job by Dina Pruitt, who actually has a golden shoe. Now, you get the white Georgia sock there with the G, and actually a true golden shoe. Dina says, does this make me eligible for the Golden Shoe Award? I promise no one is a bigger Gator Hater than I am. Yes, Dina, congratulations for your golden shoe. We will make you the Golden Shoe winner today. Y'all have a great weekend. I'll see you back here on Monday. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.